Well, as promised, I have Bishop Paul Verrain online. For those of our listeners who've never heard of him, Bishop Paul, just in short, a bio of your background, please.
Well, I've been a Methodist minister, ordained in 1978, but entered the ministry in 1973 in Uitenhage. I then went to Butterworth for 2 years. I was then moved to college in Grahamstown, and then to Port Elizabeth, and then to Roodepoort, and then to Orlando in Soweto, and then into the center of Johannesburg, continued living in Soweto, and I'm still working in a community center in Jabavu in Soweto.
Now, you've heard the intro to this program and the questions that we're asking. What does the Lord require of his followers in a time such as this? No doubt we have seen a lot of violence on all sides in South Africa, irrespective of race, creed, or color. What can we as Christians do? How should we process the information available to us on a daily basis? And might I add, a lot of this information comes from the media. Bad news sells. Should we look at this information as scouts? Should we look at this information as soldiers? What would your advice be, sir?
Well, I think it's important to obviously, first of all, struggle to find as close to the truth as we can. The press very often gives a view of the truth, and sometimes that view is influenced by all sorts of things, whether it's politics, whether it's part of our history. And so if we can, it's important for us to inform ourselves as fully around the context so that our understanding can be fair.
Bishop Paul, would you kindly complete the sentence for me to the best of your understanding? What mature Christianity needs in a time such as this in South Africa, a time of emotional insecurity, is? What would you say is that we need? Where do we start?
Well, I think that we obviously as Christians start with the example that is set by Christ. And the examples are varied and different in the four Gospels, for instance. But clearly, Christ concerned himself with the ministry first and foremost that was compassionate, particularly for the most vulnerable in society. Whether they had been violated by communities, whether they were hungry, whether they were crippled, and whether they were possessed, as sometimes is presented by the Gospels. It's quite clear that Christ had a holistic search for justice in his ministry, for righteousness, for living lives that reflected an obedience to the commands of Christ, that we love God with our whole heart and soul and mind and strength, that we love our neighbors as ourselves, and that we love one another as he's loved us.
So the understanding is that he sees justice regardless of color, occupation, or gender, whether it be in South Africa or in the rest of the world. And there's a deep and a clear call in scriptures that this core value is non-negotiable. Your comments, please.
Yes, I think that that's fair. I mean, there are some circumstances in our present context that reflect quite closely to some of the issues that he confronted in his earthly ministry. So, for instance, his willingness to engage a Samaritan woman. Now, the Samaritans were almost seen as unclean, and he speaks the gospel and engages with her. So he crosses the kind of traditional human boundaries that we set in place of tribe, of race, of gender, and even of age.
In the South African context, we as Christians sometimes seem to be able to cut through our own prejudices, the biasness, the motivations, and attempt to see the facts and the evidence as objectively as we can. What advice can you give Christians in South Africa? Where do we start with this, sir?
Well, you know, I think that the Christian community, first of all, has got the most incredible access to people. If you think Sunday by Sunday, who comes and sits in a congregation, their varied experiences, their insights, their knowledge of what's really happening on the ground in communities. There are very, very, very few institutions and organizations that have the same kind of access to humanity as the church does. Even, not even politicians in government have the kind of access that we do. So I think, first of all, it's very important for Christian people to recognize that our faith engages us directly in the communities in which we live. Our faith is not something that gives us an opportunity to escape and not find a way of engaging in the issues that are facing our community. So, for instance, at the present moment, right today, there are issues with foreign nationals in KwaMashu, in the Durban area. Now, it's important that the churches, in actual fact, cooperate and enable a dialogue and a way of interacting with one another to mediate in that province of dreadful proportions. And of course, it's a little bit like a wildfire. When once it starts there, it can go all over the place. And of course, sometimes clever politicians use the foreign national narrative to try and win votes.
Yeah.
So it's important for the Christian community in that kind of place to say, in actual fact, our responsibility is, number one, to seek a way of making peace. Not a superficial peace, but a peace where people respect one another, where people take mutual care of one another, where people are prepared to listen with respect to the other person's point of view. So really, Christians are called to be peacemakers, recognizing that peace is not just an absence of conflict. It's working in situations of conflict to bring an alternative.
Bishop Paul, with the last census in South Africa, almost 80% of people in this country said that they are Christian. Yet we struggle with contentious issues, not only xenophobia, we struggle with farm murders, we struggle with child pornography, we struggle with all sorts of dark issues on our continent. Talk to me about unconditional pursuit of forgiveness and not revenge, because you say we should be peacemakers, but there are literally thousands who's not willing to make peace, who wants to deal with it on another level. What does it mean in the South African context that we should be peacemakers, seekers of forgiveness and not revenge?
Yeah, the question is, I don't think, very difficult, but the action that must follow is very difficult. So, for instance, if we are in a situation of conflict and potential violence, one has to listen very, very, very carefully to whatever is creating the essence of those conflicts. So, for instance, one of the things in this very Christian country of ours is that there is a radical injustice in terms of the distance between the stinking rich and the abject poor. And so the Christian community has got to be asking, what kind of economics begins to give everybody in South Africa an opportunity at least not to live out of dustbins, homeless, and you know the rest?
Yeah.
And those are very difficult questions, because they ask very deep questions about our willingness to be truly generous as Jesus was generous, to be truly forgiving, as Jesus was forgiving, even from the cross, and to be able to begin to start in such a way that I begin to start recognizing that my security, my dignity, really to some degree must depend on your dignity. It's not my own private business. And so when children are being exposed to abnormal, let me say, sexual predators, we do have to confront that. And sometimes that confrontation is very, very unpleasant. But we dare not keep quiet.
Yeah.
Because if we do, we must reckon that we are investing in tragedy in people's lives, in their intimacy, in their whole psychodynamic existence. We are assigning people to lives of dysfunction and pain. And so, and unfortunately, so much of our faith is completely divorced. We go to church, and as Karl Marx says, we take our religious drug and we escape our responsibilities. So mature Christians are people who actually confront corruption wherever it is, whether it's in business, whether it's in the church, whether it's in government. Mature Christians are people who struggle to bring fairness to everybody. What are we going to say when we stand before God one day and he said, in your day, there were 20 million South Africans who went to bed at night hungry? What did you do about it? And I don't have to take you into Matthew 25 to prove my point. I was hungry, you fed me. I was naked, you clothed me. The scripture is full of encouragement that as we become true disciples of Jesus Christ, the Spirit of the Lord comes upon us because he anoints us to preach good news to the poor.
It's an ever-growing divide between the rich and the poor, as you quite rightly said, not only in South Africa, but indeed all over the world. And there is a sense that poverty also, in the hardship of poverty, breeds violence sometimes because I want what you have. And then there's a sense amongst Christians that justice will only be served once the perpetrators are dealt with legally, and if not legally, privately. Your comment, sir?
You know, one always has to ask, where does the perpetrator begin? So does the perpetrator, is the perpetrator of the injustice the stinking rich or the criminal that goes and breaks into our house? Now, I do not believe that the solution to poverty is theft or violence. And that's why it's important for Christians to be engaged in a different story. And that means that we've got to, part of our journey in faith is, as it were, a journey downwards, where we seek to understand the poor, where we take the cause of the poor so that ultimately there is absolutely no excuse for the violence that is taking place. Let me just say to you, I think that a huge amount of criminal activity in this country is not necessarily being perpetrated by poor people. I think a huge amount of the violence and the theft that's going on is taking place at the hands of rich people, very often rich people who may manipulate vulnerable poor people. Not that the poor people are always innocent. They can be as obsessed with money as rich people can. But you hear what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That there are some fairly clever rich people who use the vulnerability of poor people to get up to their nonsense. Now, yes, one of the good things in this country is that we have a very rigorous justice system, which is still independent. And I think they do an incredible job, particularly in the light of the huge task that they have. But that's not all. You know, I mean, you know that the correctional services at the moment have a program of victim-offender dialogues where you find the victim confronting their perpetrator and needing to speak through the effect of the damage that they have done to not just individuals, but to families and to generations. And that journey in the Department of Correctional Services is, I think, straight out of the gospel, because ultimately when a prisoner has to re-enter into society, if some of that stuff is not dealt with deeply, it will just perpetuate itself and perpetuate itself. So there are some very, very good initiatives that are being taken, actually quite structurally within the society. But as you can imagine, the work cannot only be done by a few ministers. It is the work of every person who comes to church every Sunday.
Well, I wanted to ask you, Bishop Paul, do you think the church is doing enough? Do you think Christians are doing enough in South Africa to play there? But you mentioned that Matthew 25, to bring about change, real change in South Africa.
Now, I, you know, obviously, I think from what I've said, you can hear that, and when I criticize the church, I recognize that I am part of that. I'm criticizing myself.
Yeah.
There's a huge amount more that we can do. And I actually think we need a different kind of imagination of how church should happen. It would be interesting if one cut down the time of what we call worship on a Sunday and you had a strategic planning session with the people sitting in the church. Because, you know, in some churches, you, for instance, you might well have senior people in government sitting in a pew, and you might also have a homeless person sitting in those pews next to one another. Now, what's the use of taking communion together and having a spiritual, wonderful experience that actually doesn't shift your consciousness about one another drastically? And you know, so many people come to church and they remain strangers to one another for 50 years. And so I think that clergy have got to begin another kind of imagination. I was at a meeting on education recently, and there was a Catholic father who was there, and he said something that really caught my imagination. Can you imagine every congregation being a site of education, for instance? You know, in the township, I was in Kulini in this last week, on Monday. You go into the township and there's one church after the other, the Methodist, the Anglican, the AME, the Presbyterian, the Uniting Reformed, all of them, one after the other, all during the week almost, standing completely empty. Now, can you imagine if we could somehow get something going in that church? Because I met with a whole group of young people who are unemployed. And, you know, it's true to say that the devil finds work for idle hands. And if the church ran post-matric or post-school or even improvement classes for school and you use those buildings during the week to set up a whole network of skills development, of training in academics, of art, of music, of you name it.
We will definitely bring about a change, definitely.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes.
But this is exactly my point. This is another perspective here. Why is it then that we feel so deeply convicted that we have a right to respond in a certain way, and yet we find it difficult to look at our own convictions from another perspective? Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, I think some of us are very sick, to be honest. You know, the loss of an imagination is a sign of pathology. You know that. And to some degree, the churches are so conflicted within themselves around power sometimes, around tiny, completely insignificant stuff, that they actually, they're a little bit like soccer players on the field having an argument and forgetting where the ball is. Yeah, I suppose if one had to pray, one would pray to God that somehow there was a reawakening of the essence of the gospel.
So, Bishop Paul, is there a way forward? Is there a way forward? Is there hope?
Yes.
Is there hope?
Yes. I think there are many people in the church who are very creative. They need to be listened to. Sometimes it sounds as if they're completely off the beaten track. Those are the people we've got to begin to start giving voice to. It cannot be imprisoned in the minds and in the actions only of the ministers. You know, the ministers are important, and I would respect that. But we also have to, you know, from a spiritual point of view, it's being stuck in grade one forever.
But my question is still, how do we change it?
Well, I think that we've got to insist that we open up the doors of communication.
Yeah.
You know, because as I listen to what's happening in the Catholic Church, I become absolutely stunned by the effectiveness of some of the work that they do. You know, some of the stuff, for instance, that the Jesuits do with refugees, and, you know, I know that story well, is incredible.
Yeah.
So to ignore the experience and the wisdom and the energy that is in that part of the church is really, it's like having the intelligence to go to university and deciding, now I'm just going to sit at home and watch television. You know what I mean? And it's exactly the same between English and Afrikaans, you know. I mean, the English churches, let me say this, the English churches are very critical of the Dutch Reformed Church because of apartheid and all that rubbish.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
Some Afrikaans churches are doing such incredible work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the work that they do builds up a bank of knowledge and wisdom that the whole church needs. So the Afrikaans church, for instance, has developed in ways that we could never have imagined because they were always considered as conservative and yet, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
God's chosen, frozen.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, these other arrogant churches, and I speak for myself in the Methodist church, talks too much and does too little.
The challenge is out there, sir. The challenge
yeah.
is out there. Let's start communicating with one another, and hopefully yeah. somewhere, somehow, we bring about change through our communication. That then, Bishop Paul Verrain. Bishop Paul, thank you so much for sharing your heart and your passion with us this morning.
Can I say, democratize faith so that it can be owned by everybody. Thank you.
Keep well, sir. Okay, then.
Thank
Keep well.
You.